carnegie.org.
Good morning. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Program. John Butts is back, and John has a bunch of guests in the studio. Hi, John. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. And how are you doing, Rob?
I'm good. I'm good.
You've been dodging the showers over the weekend?
I spent a lot of time in that hot sun over the weekend, but it felt good. It felt good. I was riding my bike and doing other things.
Yeah. He was. I wish I could say that anymore. I was on the roof again Sunday, and it did, or Saturday, and it didn't feel good. But we got the job done, so I don't have to go back up there anymore. Hey, kind of thinking about it, it's coming up on August, and, you know, our gardening season is going to start here in a month or two. And those little tomato seeds, and if you're planning on planting any, you know, trying your own eggplant or peppers, it's right now would be the time to go ahead and get your seeds started. A lot of that other stuff we can wait another month or so, but I just thought I'd mention that. You have to be kind of brave this time of year. You wonder, well, how in the world am I going to grow anything except for watercress? I like to start the show by thanking our listener supporters, but more so, I really appreciate WMNF so much, and I just always think about the founders of this station and what they did for the Tampa Bay area by, you know, starting this radio station, and of course, our wonderful staff here that kind of keep it going, and then the volunteers, and I really, really appreciate being here and being part of this great institution. I think we got some of the best programmers and programs on. Of course, locally, we're connected. This is our community. And I really enjoy Eve's program. It comes on the other Monday at 10 o'clock. She's a great, great host and just unbelievable amount of knowledge. And I just love listening to her. And last week, as she does in the morning, she was basting our corporate food producers that produce soda pops like the Coca-Cola Company. And I totally agree with her. And of course, we have a program on tomorrow at 10 o'clock, Richard Wolf, and he talks about kind of the shortcomings of capitalism. And, you know, one thing that I feel like it's kind of across the board, and we talk about our corporate food and how bad it is for us, but also it's the pharmaceuticals. And today we're going to be kind of talking about beginning of life things. It's kind of a unusual show for the Sustainable Living Show, but we're going to go through it, and it's just like diapers to death. We did real good with that one, so we're going to try something a little bit different. And I guess it's been over, my lifetime, there's always been this ongoing debate about vaccinations, and in the last couple of years, I kind of hear the talking heads and NPR, people on NPR talking about how irresponsible parents are for not having their kids vaccinated. Well, on the other end, you don't hear the parents of those vaccinated children and the children with autism and all kinds of disorders because of vaccinations, and it's the truth, and it's just kind of the reality. Like we want to vaccinate all the kids in the world, when in reality what we need to do is be taking care of them. I guess it was last week on Democracy Now, they were talking about the war in Yemen and in Syria and the effect on our kids, on the kids there, and these, it's just kind of a really a pitiful situation. And instead of what we're supposed to be doing, we shouldn't be fighting wars in the first place. But anyhow, that's I'm going to get off my soapbox. Hey, Rob, what's up at 11?
Well, we're going to talk about the killing of Marcaeus McLaughlin. That'll be one of the topics. He was a guy that was shot over a dispute over a handicapped parking place, mm-hmm, in Clearwater a few days ago. And we'll talk about the governor's race, too. Lots of big possible shakeups in the governor's race. So we'll talk about that today at 11 o'clock.
Cool. And I guess Sean's still on vacation?
Sean is on vacation.
Are you going to have the Jimmy Dore show on?
I didn't have time to edit the Jimmy Dore show. It needs a tiny bit of editing because there's a few cuss words in there. So today we're not going to be playing Jimmy Dore. I'm going to try to play him next week. It's always a good show, isn't it, John?
Yeah, well, yeah. It is, and some people don't think it is. And you had a listener comment on last week that you aired, and I thought it was kind of, because it's kind of like my wife and I, we have a little different taste about that. I really don't, I don't know, you know, the bleeping, there's a lot of bleeping in there, and it's kind of wasted airspace, but I like it. I like everything we do here and everything you do, Rob. I really appreciate.
Thank you. He feels so strongly about the things he says. So he speaks the way I think a lot of people speak in private conversations.
Yeah. That's the way I speak, too.
You do? No, I didn't think you would use those.
Well, I wouldn't do it here, that's for sure. This is the WMNF Community Supported Sustainable Living Program, and of course I'm Farmer John, and Tanya Victovic is back. Hey Tanya, how you doing?
Hey John, thanks for having me again.
Great to have you. And you know, I never mention it, but old Frank Knox is always back there helping us out with the phones, and of course Rob's always making it sound good on the other end. You know, about 5 years ago I got a suggestion for a guest, and that guest was Tanya. And ever since then, she's been helping me out with the program, and I really appreciate it. And that's the reason Tanya's here. She's a great help and supports me and kind of helps me. You know, if anybody needs help here at WMNF, it's me. And I certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much, Tanya, for
It's my pleasure. It really is.
Okay. And as I said, we're going to kind of talk about home births today, starting life sustainably. But first, a little bit of backyard. Poultry, or is it poetry? I mean, what, poetry or poultry? Okay, well, you know, we in the past, there's been a couple of shows where our guests actually had feathers and they laid eggs, and they actually sit here right on our counter and kind of made funny noises and all that. Well, anyhow, that is a returning, the person that brought those is a returning guest, and Kenny writes about pets and pet issues and homesteading. He has his own blog, Critters Companions, and then he does write for some national gardening and poultry magazines. And also, Kenny's a school teacher. He has 8 chickens and a couple of ducks, and he's just written a book of poems. Welcome back, Kenny Coogan.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you, Kenny. And he's going to start with a poem.
That's right. So this book is a celebration of homesteading and home gardening, and it's really talking about sustainable living. So my grand plan is to live off the land, but first I'll need to amend the sand. Applying permaculture practices, I'll include a few edible cactuses. First I'll amend the grainy sand. Do you plant a garden or have one planned? Everything in the garden will be rosy. There'll be companion plants, including a few posies. Do you plant a garden or have one planned? I'll survey the land and make it grand. I'll add animals and chicken coops and always have a fresh source of soups. I'll survey the land and make it grand. Can you recommend a fence company offhand? The livestock will provide food and fiber. I'll get back to nature and reduce my cyber. Can you recommend a fence company offhand? I'm so excited about my plan. It's really grand. I'll achieve self-sufficiency and live tastefully by closing my system. I'll stop living wastefully. I'm so excited about my plan. It's really grand. Here's to my first year on the farmland. There are lots to learn and lots to understand. My grand plan is to live off the land.
How about that?
Thank you. So, in addition to this homesteading book, which is coming out October 1st, but it's available for pre-order, I also started offering chicken keeping, homesteading, vegetable gardening workshops at my homestead. And I have a chicken workshop coming up in a couple of weeks. And at that workshop, it's an introductory workshop. I just had one last week, and a group of Seminole Heights residents came, and they enjoyed it. We talked about coop and husbandry requirements, choosing breeds for Florida that are heat tolerant, general care, and about raising chicks. And getting chicks is really thrilling. Caring for them is so fulfilling. First, before your chicks arrive, set up their brooder so they thrive. This is the place for the chicks to grow before they lay eggs and begin to crow. To warm them, provide artificial heat. Huddling together, they'll look so sweet. Allow half a square foot per chick in the brooder. Keep them safe by excluding intruders. Prevent a chick from being a tormentor by placing the food and water bowl in center. Starter feed has the vitamins chicks need. For now, you skip the scratch feed. Clean often and keep the brooder tidy and dry, and in a few weeks, they'll enjoy the fresh sky. Soon you'll have a dependable group providing fresh eggs straight from the coop.
And they go on and on and on. Yeah.
That's right.
No, it's some great, great poetry. And you were saying you also have a little, not FFA, what was it? FFA at your middle school, and you teach at Wilson?
That's right.
Right here in Tampa.
Yeah, so this year will be our first year offering the FFA program. Last year we started an agriculture program, and the kids enjoyed it, so we're going to be expanding. And last week when I had that chicken workshop, I had to warn the people about poultry math. Because once you start getting a couple of chickens, you know what happens. So the ticks were outrageous, and chickens are courageous, so I decided to get a few. The chickens multiplied and their eggs satisfied as they worked hard as the ground crew. While there's no more bloodshed on this pest-free homestead, the chickens worked great, who knew? Chicken math is not restricting, as animals can be addicting, and now I've got some that go moo.
That's awesome. I love that you're finding humor in homesteading, because and just the art of writing and finding words, and those are hilarious and also heartwarming. So,
thank you, Tanya. So, at all of the workshops, I start with a tour of my homestead, and the people are really enjoying that they can take these skills back to their home. Whereas if you're going to like a big corporate place to learn about chicken keeping, it's not really applicable to somebody who has a tiny little, you know, stamp postage backyard. So some of the fixtures I show are like the greenhouse and the chicken coops. And this poem is titled Houses. There's tiny Tuscan and tree, but none of those are for me. They're single, stilt, and sod, but I think those are flawed. Ontario Cottage and American Colonial have superlative testimonials, but a villa of Victorian would make me feel like a historian. Wigwam or igloo wouldn't be an issue, but a massive McMansion would have room for a grooming stanchion. A light or log house would be fun, but my favorite house is a green one. All right, so tomorrow I have a make and take workshop. More details are at kennycoogan.com. You can pre-order my book there. And at this make and take workshop, I'm going to be providing the glass containers, planting mediums like horticulture grade charcoal to keep those terrariums not smelling. I'll be providing soil, pebbles, and everyone gets 4 plants and 5 decorations. And you can buy tickets at kennycoogan.com. And before the show, we were talking about how it's summer, there's a lot of rain, and there's a lot of weeds popping up. And I want to give your listeners some advice. Homesteading is all about creating results, and quite frankly, I was sick of the weedy insults. Buckhorn plantain, chickweed, and pigweed were some of the things that overtook through seed. Crabgrass, dandelions, and clover did not care if they ran them over. So I created a sign to reduce my groan. Free homemade weeds, pick your own. Now I have lots of time since I'm weed-free. Just wish I didn't have to pay for stinging nettle tea. And that's a true story. I used to have stinging nettle tea, and I would have the plant, and I would make tea out of it. And then I gave some to my friends, and I thought it was a weed, so it would come back, but it never came back. So, also, you know, it's approaching like it's like peak season, and a lot of times people are trying to preserve their produce. So one way that you can do that is by canning. And sometimes you might be asking, what can you can? I know I can ginger peach jam, but can I can a lamb? Apple pie filling is easy, but can I can something cheesy? I'll keep my fingers crossed on canning this raspberry apple sauce. As I know you can fruit puree, but can you can an entree? Canned corn salsa would be good eats, as well as dilly beans and pickled beets. Peas and peppers and baked beans would taste great canned along with some greens. Can you can everything from a frying pan? Of course you can.
Cool.
those are great, Kenny.
Thanks. So I am offering those three workshops, and this Saturday at Shell's Feed Store, which is on Nebraska, I'll be offering two workshops, and it's Make a Succulent for a Teacher workshops. So it's really for elementary and middle school teachers. You can find more information on WMNF Sustainable Living Facebook page, my Facebook page, Shell's Facebook page. You can call Shell's Feed Store. There's two time slots, and I'll be teaching the students, the children, how to care for a succulent for 7 days, and then they can gift them to their teacher, and then it'll be their teacher's problem. And so before I go, well, I wanted to say another thing. John and Tanya and now Charlie, we're all friends, and we're basically like family. And if you go to KennyCoogan.com and you enter FAM10, FAM10, you get 10% off the book, and you get free shipping for today and tomorrow, which is the month of June. And before I go, I just wanted to read one more poem. And this poem kind of bridges my poetry with today's topic. And it's about, you know, holistic pediatrics. It's about raising children. And this poem is called Raising Seedlings. Moving is stressful. Make it successful, allowing time to adjust by building trust. You've started your seeds, focus on water needs. As they stand steady, they'll look ready to move into the plot, but give it a second thought. Young plants may not last with a transplant that's fast. Prepare them for success by giving them one final caress. Encourage their individuality, applaud and praise their mentality, respect different learning styles, dole out endless hugs and smiles, eat dinner together, and prep for cold weather. Balance bedtime with playtime, read, 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 weed, 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 expose them to culture and the arts, and they will grow kind, loving parts. It helps to keep them in drawers, to introduce them to the outdoors. Inside, they aren't exposed to elements. Ensure their pots are secured with sediments. Seedlings are susceptible to any extreme. Give them support with a pole beam. Don't send your babies out hungry or dry. We're near the end, and it's time to say bye. The final schlepping may bring you to tears. These babies have been with you for 18 years. The final goodbye may feel like a sting. Be confident that you raised well-rounded offspring.
That's perfect. That's a good transition into our next guest. So,
thank you very much. So the workshops in the book are available at KennyCoogan.com.
Well, thank you very much, Rob. Anything? Kenny got pretty much covered the whole thing.
Yeah. Kenny, what are the dates on the workshop again?
I have a workshop tomorrow, which is Make and Take Terrarium. And so that's at my house. On Saturday is the Shells workshop.
What time does that start?
There's one in the morning and one in the afternoon. The first one, I believe, is at 10:30 to 11:30, and then 1:30 to 2:30. And you can definitely call Shells to pre-register, because we're buying, you know, the certain amount of workshop materials. And then I have monthly chicken keeping, terrarium building, and animal training workshops. And we were kind of talking this before the show. I have, you know, 7 chickens, and 4 of them know how to do agility. They know how to do a weave pole, a teeter-totter, a bridge. They know how to turn in a circle. And I've just been teaching them how to lean into like certain parts of their body and to certain places. So I have a stethoscope. So I'm teaching them to voluntarily offer their chest so I can get their heartbeat. And I also train them how to take liquids from a syringe. So in case they need like a liquid deworming or some type of medication, I don't have to grab them and restrain them. They're doing it all voluntarily. So I'm offering those 3 workshops on a monthly basis. The next chicken keeping workshop is August 20th. And then the terrarium workshop's tomorrow, but then the one that follows that is August 27th. And they change the different nights of the week to accommodate everyone's schedule.
Thank you very much, Kenny. Thanks, Kenny. We're going to take a little short break now, Rob, and we'll be right back.
All right, you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Pacifica.
Awesome. If you send me all the way.
This is the Sustainable Living Program on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM.
Tanya, you want to go ahead and take over?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Actually, we have two guests in today with us, I guess including myself. We have three. Dr. David Berger, who's a board-certified pediatrician who specializes in holistic pediatric primary care, nutritional and detoxification therapies for autism, ADHD, and related disorders. And also we have our local amazing midwife, Charlie Young, who is a graduate of Florida School of Traditionary Midwifery. Who also has a birthing bus with us today. So I'm excited to have both of you in to talk about natural options, sustainable options for pregnancy, for birthing, and for after, you know, for the primary care of your children.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Hello.
All right. Dr. Berger, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on.
Sharon, hi, Charlie.
Hi. Dr. Berger and I share lots of mutual patients.
So.
Yeah, that's what I heard. So, Dr. Berger, can you tell us about what you have as far as your what you offer in Tampa for the natural options as far as pregnancy and prenatal counseling?
Absolutely. Well, a lot of our work in terms of detoxification, nutrition, sustainability, lifestyle approaches sprang out of our work that we started doing with people with autism approximately 20 years ago, trying to reverse them. And as we started finding that these protocols were helping improve their quality of life, their cognitive function, their abilities to communicate, parents started asking and feeling, hey, we're ready to have another child now. Maybe we have some of these same issues as the child does. Can we check ourselves to see if maybe we can make some of these corrections before we get pregnant in the first place? And at first, my thought was, well, I'm a pediatrician, I take care of kids, not adults, but then I realized, well, I'm taking care of future children that way, and realistically, you know, there's not that much difference between an 18-year-old woman and a 30-year-old woman, you know, in terms of the rest of their health, so I'm qualified, I'm licensed to treat an 18-year-old, so I kind of made the decision, since there was nobody else doing it, that, yeah, I would run these same protocols on adults as kids, and so ideally, we try to get them even before they conceive, where we take a look at them nutritionally, making sure that they're as organic as possible, that they're not getting exposed to a lot of the BPAs and pesticides and other chemicals that none of us can pronounce, to making sure that they are in a good mental health state to sustain a good pregnancy, to make sure that really everything is there so that they can have the optimal, both physical as well as emotional environment for a fetus and then a baby to develop. And then we are able to take them through lactation, and so they become our, you know, the moms become our patients as well, because they're obviously the nutritional surrogate for the child if they're nursing. And so that's really kind of the approach that we really took for the special needs population and converted it over to more of a preventive approach to work with the general population.
Well, that's a lot of information. So you mentioned that there were some things in there that you for suggestions in order to prevent some of these, some of the issues that can come up, like autism. One of them you're saying was reducing toxins in your life?
Yeah. So both, you know, so we educate people. You know, we use some of the really great websites like the Environmental Work Group Skin Deep Program that talks about, like, different things that could be in anything from cosmetics and shampoos that they can be exposed to. We also refer a lot to their Dirty Dozen and Clean 15 list in terms of which fruits and vegetables are more concerning in terms of if they're not organic relative to what they've been grown with. So that's some of the external sources that we do. But there's also a series of tests that we really recommend everybody get, such as making sure that they have optimal vitamin D levels, optimal zinc levels, iron levels, and we tell them we don't aim for the bottom of the barrel. If the reference range is 30 to 100, we're not looking for a 31. We're looking for a middle-of-the-road type of value, like a 60-70 in general. Another one of the things that we spend a lot of time looking at is some of the genetics and the genes that are associated with the enzymes that are needed for us to produce our detoxification protein. So, for instance, there is a gene that a lot of people have heard about called MTHFR, whose job is to activate folate. And if you can't activate fully, you can't start the detoxification pathway. And they've shown, for instance, that if a mother, mothers of children with autism are 3.5 times more likely to have this genetic mutation. But if you identify them, you can just have them take activated folate instead of regular folate, kind of like if you can't take it, take it, and that way your body can go on to produce these other things that otherwise everything would get gummed up.
Well, those are really, you know, interesting things that I hadn't really heard of before. And then I was reading also that you have helped over 2,000 children. Is that to progress into regressive autism?
Yeah, we've taken care of approximately 2,000. I wouldn't be surprised if the number is closer to 3,000 now. And these are children who came to us with the diagnosis already, who we've done these various protocols, and certainly not all children, but the majority of children, we are able to document significant clinical improvements, whether it's in their behaviors or their social skills or their communication skills or their GI situation, because a lot of these kids have either chronic constipation or chronic diarrhea, to better sleep. A lot of them have very interrupted sleep or very restless sleep. And so, you know, a lot of what we do is a very individualized approach. You know, there was a running joke back in med school that if you've seen asthma once, you've seen asthma, because everybody kind of reacts the same way, you treat it the same way, although I disagree with that. But with autism, it's like if you've seen a kid with autism, you've seen a kid with autism, because they're all so different. And so it's a very individualized approach we take, and certainly we don't do everything with all people. It really more depends on what their history is and what their lab values show.
And then John touched on it a little bit. What are your feelings about just different vaccination options?
Well, we take an approach that families will have both the right as well as the responsibility to make a decision as to what they think is best for them. Just like different people, some people react to peanuts and strawberries. You can react to anything. And so there are people out there who can react to vaccines, whether one believes that that's 0.1% of the population or 1% or 10%, it's a percentage. And so, and unfortunately, people don't walk in with a sign or a handout from their OB saying, my kid has been genetically fine, we know that there's no problem. So especially when you're talking about a two-month-old baby where you really don't know much about them from a developmental perspective or from an immune perspective or a detoxification perspective, there is a certain level of unknown going into a situation that we sure would like to have more knowledge about.
And so if you have that sort of, is there a test that you can do to see if you're more likely to have a reaction to vaccinations?
Unfortunately, no. There is none. You know, so there are certain things that do concern me more, such as mostly for people who have overacting immune systems, whether it's on the autoimmune side, and this is true not just for the person, because obviously a baby you don't know, but if there's a strong family history of autoimmune conditions, allergies, asthma, eczema, hyperinflammatory, colitis, you know, I kind of use the generic term immune systems gone wild. If your immune system, if you have a predisposition to overreacting on your immune system, and you give somebody a vaccine who's, by definition, you're supposed to mount an immune response to that, that's how the vaccines work. So if there is somebody who is more prone to overreacting to something, again, just like they can react to a strawberry or a peanut, they can overreact to anything. And so that's a big part of what we do, is looking at people's family histories or personal histories to kind of get some lay of the land as to how that child is. But unfortunately, or thankfully, I mean, we're obviously, we don't have clones, so it's a challenge, because there's not another person that I can pair a given to, unless they have an identical twin, as to what their genetics are, the air that they're breathing, the water they're drinking, the quality of the food, the peacefulness or lack thereof at home. So, you know, everybody is, what we say, everybody's an N of one. There's every study that's out there has at least one basic flaw in it, is that whoever those studies were done on, they weren't done on your kid with your circumstances.
Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and that is Dr. David Berger, who's a local pediatrician, and you're getting his ideas. You are local, right, Dr. Berger?
Yeah, we're up in the Carrollwood area.
Okay, and this is 88.5 FM. Also here is Charlie Young, who's a midwife. And Charlie, tell us, midwifery, what is midwifery?
Yeah, so midwifery, I like to jokingly say, is the second oldest profession. So, you know, as midwives, we take care of normal, low-risk pregnant women. We provide prenatal care, deliveries, and postpartum care. With my particular practice, we're kind of keeping that old-school model of midwifery. We visit people in their home. We do deliveries in the home and see them where they're most comfortable.
How common is midwifery these days? Because there was a big explosion in the 70s and 80s. Is it still as popular today as it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago?
Well, you know, that resurgence in the 60s and 70s came back from the 30s. Back in the 30s, everyone had their babies at home, especially here in rural areas. Here in Hillsborough County, though, nationally, there's maybe a 1% of people using midwives in out-of-hospital settings. Here in Hillsborough, we have anywhere between a 3 and 8%, depending on the year. So it's actually a really large amount, and that can be in-home or in birth center settings. And then there are also nurse midwives who deliver in hospital settings as well.
What are the advantages, would you say, of having either your baby born at home or at a birthing center?
Well, you know, there's many. Most people find us because they had a not so great experience being kind of in the establishment of a hospital system, you know, either feeling like it was impersonal or that they had, you know, kind of things inflicted on them that they weren't necessarily wanting as a healthy person going into having a baby. But the advantages of lower cost, more personalized care, you know, it's been proven statistically that we have better outcomes as far as maternal morbidity and mortality. So those are all benefits that kind of create a larger picture for families to find us.
If you've had a baby already, excuse me, and maybe the first baby by cesarean section, is it hard to use a midwife for the second delivery?
Well, there's definitely certain considerations that we take into account, but that's generally, you know, in our culture of birth right now in the United States, 1 in 3 women are having cesareans. So if a woman has a cesarean with her primary delivery, they find us subsequently to try and find another option to have a vaginal birth. So there's considerations, but here in Tampa especially, there's lots of options for those women. They don't have to have a repeat C-section.
All right. So if you've got a question for Charlie Young, the midwife, or Dr. David Berger, our pediatrician, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Or you can send your question in via email at dj@wmnf.org.
Because with the idea of sustainability and with the show, I mean, sustainability, I feel, is all aspects of life, from, you know, how you... the products that you choose to have in your house, to choosing where you're going to be getting your energy from, to planting trees and gardening. But it also has to do with, you know, how you birth, I think, and also how you choose to raise your children. So having a natural option is important, and having a sustainable option is important. And even Charlie, you mentioned the costs. I mean, do you have an idea of, as far as the costs go, is for hospital versus a home birth?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, standard in this area for a normal vaginal birth in the hospital, you're going to spend anywhere between $9,000 and $19,000. And that's going to look different depending on insurance and whether you're, you know, uninsured or whatever. With a midwife, it's anywhere between $6,000 and $8,000 for home or birthing center. You know, as providers here, we accept Medicaid. So we take care of women who are approved for Medicaid. A lot of us work on sliding scales. So there's definitely a sustainability aspect there that kind of makes it more accessible to everyone versus, you know, needing to worry about going into debt for however many thousands of dollars to have a baby.
I just want to jump back to Dr. Berger. Dr. Berger, have we decided, is the medical community in agreement on what causes either ADHD or autism?
Well, I think that they've decided it's due to a Ritalin deficiency, because that seems to be how they treat it. In fact, one of the things that, first of all, the mainstream medical community, I don't really think, has looked at this very much. You know, there is some information out coming out from a genetic perspective. There is some information even now I'm starting to see from the Academy of Pediatrics that are talking about BPA and pesticides. Something actually just came out from the AAP last week that starts that's starting to have that conversation. So, you know, this is something that I've been thinking about for about 20 years, and there are things coming around now. But in fact, even when it comes to the term autism, and some of us have even come to using the term autisms plural, recognizing that there's more than one path that may end up somebody there in the symptoms, because the diagnosis of autism is based only upon symptoms. There's no particular test that you can do of a blood test or genetic test that says a person has autism. And so whether a person did have a regression because of something that they were exposed to as a baby, or whether there was a, you know, there could be a head trauma that could lead a person in a direction, there could be negligence that could lead to a person and you know, to a situation. So there definitely is no consensus as to what may be causing it. You know, I certainly have my opinions and my observations over the years, though.
What about ADHD? Is ADHD tied to nutrition, do you think?
Yeah, I tend to use the term the neurodevelopmental and behavioral spectrum to kind of catch not just the autism and the person with ADD, but the person with Tourette's and mood disorders and other forms of developmental disorders. I look at it all kind of part of the same spectrum. So when I'm approaching a person with ADHD, it's at least until I start to see what's abnormally happening for them from a biochemical perspective, it's an incredibly similar approach that I take across the spectrum of those conditions that I've mentioned. So, you know, it really, you know, again, since I'm not taking the approach that it's a Ritalin deficiency and that's how we should treat it, you know, we go looking for it. And, you know, if a person has a vitamin D deficiency, if a person has a zinc deficiency, if a person has an iron deficiency, well, whether you're neurotypical or you're not neurotypical, that's not a good thing. And so that's why I take more the approach of, you know, I'm not just saying, hey, let's everybody take a bunch of vitamin D and, hey, everybody, let's take a bunch of zinc. But if I do a blood test and it shows that you have suboptimal levels, and that could be a really good idea, and then I do follow-up testing to make sure that we're not overdoing it. So we're able to really find the sweet spot that way. And then,
found good results by bringing up those levels in some cases.
Oh, tremendous. So, and another one of the big areas that we've seen tremendous improvements, especially in behaviors and focus, has to do with the overgrowth of candida yeast that happens, especially when people have taken lots of antibiotics, or if they're born by C-section and therefore don't go through the birth canal, which is where we get our first dose of our flora from, that sets us from the very beginning. If I have a patient who's born by C-section, I actually tell the parents to do what's called orthomopic antibiotics during the delivery. We even have tell them ways of that they can give the vaginal juices to the baby orally after the baby's born. It's called vaginal seeding. Or we give probiotics, you know, things to get the flora there. And especially if you're in a hospital where things like candida and clostridia grow all over the place, you're even more prone to getting exposed to it when you're there than if it was a home birth or a midwifery birth in a center. So it's kind of like the perfect storm. They're in an environment in the hospital where they're more likely to get exposed to antibiotics and more likely to be exposed to bacteria and yeast that are growing because the environment is there. So there's a setup there. So that's a lot. But I've seen kids make incredible improvements with their autism symptoms by adequately treating the yeast.
That's Dr. David Berger, who's in Carrollwood here in Hillsborough County. Charlie Young is here. She practices in Tampa. Charlie is a midwife. David is a pediatrician. And you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program on WMNF. And let's take some phone calls. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Christina in St. Petersburg. Hi, Christina. What's your question?
Hi. It's more of a comment, just to say that I had a home birth, and it was so much more incredible and amazing than you think it's going to be, and I was terrified, and it's just, for anybody having a home birth or having a midwife, just don't. It was, you know, I was declared all clear, so I was safe, and there was no risk or anything like that, so for me, it was the right decision. Going into it, I was pretty terrified, and I wanted an epidural, and I said, no, I'm not going to do it, so...
Well, that's great. And Christina, do you have one child?
I do, yes. He's one now.
Yeah. Are you thinking about having another child?
I'm pretty tired right now.
Sorry, I asked. Bad question right now.
That one.
All right. Well, Christina, thanks. Thanks for the testimonial.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you are listening to...
this.
Thanks a lot. You're listening to 88.5 FM. Camille writes this. she says, Charlie, midwifery is amazing. Can you further explain the education and experience that goes into becoming a licensed midwife in the state of Florida, as well as a certified professional midwife in the U.S.? It's wonderful to know that women have other options, and I feel it would be impactful to express the amount of knowledge and experience a midwife will learn through the years, from schooling to student midwife through the yearly evaluation and peer reviews.
Man, what a great question.
And
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. So, Camille touches on some great points. So I'm a licensed midwife and certified professional midwife here in the state of Florida, and we also have certified nurse midwives. So nurse midwives, typically they go through nursing training and then become a nurse midwife. And so because of that, there's some different, political things that affect their practice. So they're required to practice under an OB, and they typically practice in hospital settings, although sometimes they're in birth center or home settings with an agreement with an obstetrician. As a licensed midwife in Florida, we are autonomous providers. So we're licensed by the Department of Health. Our protocol is written into the law. It's a really autonomous and great way to practice, to take care of women the way that, the way that we would like to take care of them without all of the politics. There's certainly still some. So our training in Florida, we have to attend a 3-year school, and that is after kind of completing some prerequisites, and then we sit for an exam, and that's the NARM exam that she mentions, a certified professional midwife, which isn't recognized in Florida, but we carry both, typically, the LMs. Not all LMs are CPMs and vice versa. It's just kind of an extra national accreditation. So we take an exam after we've completed our didactic portion. We also complete an apprenticeship model, so kind of an old school, congruently with our program, working with other midwives in home birth practices and birth center settings to attend a certain number of births, prenatals, postpartum visits. So that's all kind of together. We take kind of the old and the new style of schooling and mesh it together for our training. And that takes anywhere between 3 and 5 years for most people. Then once we sit for that exam and pass our exam, then we're licensed by the state. And so that comes with different requirements, like, maintaining that licensure. We have to have neonatal resuscitation. We have to be certified in CPR and maintain those credentials. And so that's a little different from state to state, but Florida has the most, one of the most rigorous requirements for licensed midwives. So there's quite a bit that we have to do to meet those requirements.
How many babies would you say you've delivered?
I actually keep, I've been doing this for 10 years now, and I keep a list, actually, of every birth that I've ever attended with a little note about how it was. And so I'm starting to get close to around 500 at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, so in most of those in home or birth center, it is amazing. It's a really special, I feel like my family's fourth generation Floridian, kind of cracker people, cracker crats. And so I feel like I'm kind of maintaining that old school traditional way of caring for people, just like women have done for hundreds and hundreds of years, but at the same time, making that accessible to other people. And it's a great honor. So
do you have pictures of all these kids and their moms?
I don't have all of them, but I do have lots of pictures of them. And once someone's our client, it's such a special relationship that we have. And I've been with moms for 3 or 4 babies, and we just kind of, they become a part of our family and vice versa. So it's really great.
Well, Dr. David Berger, let me ask you about vaccinations, because I know a lot of young families, when they have kids, are worried about vaccinations and possible negative outcomes. You said that you leave it up to the families to decide, the parents to decide. Do you think overall those early vaccinations that come in the first 3 or 4 years of life, are they safe, do you think?
Okay, well, safe is obviously a pretty broad term, okay? And, what we believe in, we practice informed consent, which means that in order for us to do any procedure on somebody, that the patient or the family has to provide informed consent, which means that they are going to weigh the potential benefits against the potential risks relative to the alternatives. And if they don't sign consent, then obviously I can't even give it to them. That would be an assault if I stuck a needle into somebody without the parents' consent. So first and foremost, that's really what it comes around to. Okay. Now, there is research that has shown that we know when a person gets a vaccine that there is an artificial immune response that happens when you're not exposed to a disease in the way that nature intended it to. So on our respiratory tracts and on our GI tracts, we have certain antibodies and certain white blood cells that sit there as our first level of defense, that when we get exposed to something, it sets off the entire immune cascade to recognize that infection, to kill it, and to put it into memory in order for us to be able to fight it off in the future. When you inject something into somebody, unless it's a disease that's caught by injection, so maybe one could make an argument that for tetanus, as an example, maybe giving it a vaccine is an appropriate way because that's how you catch it. But any vaccine that's given in a way that nature does not intend you to catch that infection, you are creating an artificial immune response. And they've shown that the types of immune of antibodies, the types of white blood cells, again, they're just different. And some of them are even ones that are more likely to be seen in people who have allergies and autoimmune diseases, etc. So even coming back to what we were talking about before, you know, I kind of think of it, maybe there's a proverbial cliff, and maybe because you're genetically predisposed to having an overreacting immune system, and maybe because you've been exposed to a lot of sugars or a lot of red dyes or other things in your body, and then comes along something else, maybe there are just some people who are sitting much closer to a cliff than other people. Maybe most people aren't by the cliff. We just don't know who those cliff sitters are. So, you know, so anybody, again, can have that type of, can have a reaction. We just don't know who they are. But we also know that we tell people that immune systems take at least 6 months to mature to that of like the type of white blood cell balance that adults have. In fact, we know that all newborn babies, by definition, they're immunodeficient. That's why if a baby under about 6 to 8 weeks were to get a fever, we automatically put them into the hospital, assuming that it's a bacterial infection, because we acknowledge they don't have a strong enough immune system to fight off things that older kids can. So we start off every day under the supposition that young children have immature immune systems. So if we're acknowledging that, and then we don't follow that through to all of the conclusions that one can draw, I think we're ending up with an abyss of information that would be sure nice to have when we're trying to make an informed consent decision.
So you're saying that we should wait before we give our kids that vaccination? Wait.
Well, I'm saying that if a parent chooses to wait, I support their decision to do that.
Yeah. What about this idea that too many different kinds of vaccines are given all at once, and that the baby's immune system cannot stand up to maybe two or three different kinds of vaccinations?
Yeah, I actually don't agree with that. If you walk through Publix, you're going to be exposed to many more than three viruses. Our body's immune systems are ready to handle thousands of things all at the same time. Not necessarily injected, okay, so there is definitely there, but our immune systems are definitely able to handle that. In fact, I'd be more concerned about the fact that a person, if they're getting three or four vaccines, maybe they're getting actually three or four doses of aluminum, which are in the vaccines, even though there's no mercury in the vaccines, there's still aluminum in a lot of them, and obviously if they get three or four vaccines, they could be getting even three or four times a high dose. So some of it even comes around to the what else is in there. But in terms of the actual immune system handling three or four different things, that's not as much of a concern for me as some of the other things.
And some parents are real neat freaks. That is, they don't expose their children to any sort of, dangerous, not just chemicals, but also exposure to the air in a grocery store, as you said, or right. Let them play in the dirt or whatever. What about, are there things that we can do with our kids at a safe time to build up their immune system so that they can handle? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, breastfeeding and having a vaginal delivery and breastfeeding right off the bat, avoiding antibiotics as much as possible so that those intestinal floras are good. Both the mom while nursing as well as with the kid eating as organic as possible and making sure that their nutrients are there. Those all can make really, really big impacts on these kids.
Okay. Let's take some more phone calls. You're listening to a live program. This is the Sustainable Living Program on WMNF in Tampa. That's Dr. David Berger, who is a pediatrician in the Carrollwood area. Charlie Young is here. She's a midwife. And John Butts is here, of course. And Tanya Vitovic is here. And let's go to Allison, who's in Tampa. Allison, you're on the Sustainable Living Program. What's your question?
Hi. I don't have a question either, but I definitely wanted to call and just share a little bit of my experience and reasons why I chose to have home births. I just had my second home birth for my second son with barefoot birth. And the whole thing, I actually was following Charlie for quite a while with her being a doula and her transitioning into what she has now, which is an amazing community for mothers and children. And I just knew I wanted a different experience. You know, I grew up around hospitals in a very strong family with a lot of hospitals. And I just knew I wanted a different experience with both my care and my birth. And just from prenatal to postpartum, that alone is all worth the experience. They come to your home, and I meet with my midwife the entire time. I get to talk to her about anything from just medical stuff to how I'm feeling mentally, and they just give so much support and resources for mothers and children that alone, even if I were to have been a transferred to a hospital, that community alone is all worth the choice that I made. And so I just wanted to call in really quick and give other people who might be listening that encouragement. It's not just about, you know, having a pain-free or a painful birth or anything. People think that it's more than that. It's the care and everything that you're giving your babies as I am mine.
So Allison, who's that in the background?
Right now, this is Ethan. He is going to nurse, so we're trying to nurse. and I have my son Maverick as well, who was also a barefoot birth age a little over 2 years ago.
Wow. How old are the kids?
Maverick is just over 2, and Ethan is almost 6 weeks. I actually have my postpartum visit in a couple days.
Wow, that's great.
I think something Allison mentioned, but also Dr. Berger, you know, talking about the macro picture, you'll often hear people talk about their births as like this, the experience or, you know, whatever their perception was. But I think if we bring it back down to the basics of we're mammals, so I think sometimes we forget that we're mammals and you know, most of the time your baby is just going to come out and we can't always control what the birth is going to be like. But if we're living, you know, we're talking about sustainability, if you're living that kind of sustainable life, midwifery just supports normal. You know, you're just going to have a baby. If you were by yourself and this is the apocalypse or you were 100 years ago, you're going to have your baby. Maybe somebody came to help, maybe not, but that's really at the core of that. You know, if you can be supported in that normal, then your experience is going to be so much better than if you're fighting the entire way to just be normal.
Well, Allison, and thanks
in,
a lot.
And in fact, John, you know, one of the questions that I actually always ask myself is, what does every other mammal do?
Right.
You know, and if we're and if humans are doing it differently, I got to wonder who's got it right.
That's right.
Well, Allison, thanks a lot. And this is Ethan's first time on the radio in 6 weeks. It's great. Yeah. A radio star. All right. Yes, thanks, Allison.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. We've got a few minutes left, but I want to make sure that before we go that we give out contact information, phone numbers, and then we might take another phone call. Charlie Young, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah. So they can always visit us at barefootbirth.com. We also have a 501c nonprofit community center right here in Tampa Heights. It's called the Community Roots Collective. So that information can be accessed through Barefoot Birth. And our calendar is there, or any of our other contact information via phone is there, and of course social media at Barefoot Birth for all of the youngins as well.
And Dr. David Berger, there in Carrollwood, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, our website is holisticfamilycare.com with the W. There's also a lot of information there about our medical cannabis clinic that we established a couple of years ago. But also, my last name, Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R. I'm pretty Googleable these days, too.
All right, let's take a call from Sarah in Tampa. Sarah, what's your question for our guests?
Hi. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say I was a patient of Charlie's, and I had my son about 10 months ago, and my birth was amazing. I transitioned care from an OBGYN to Charlie, and I never once felt dismissed with any of my questions or my concerns throughout my pregnancy and after my pregnancy. She was amazing. Actually, both of the midwives that attended my birth were students of Charlie's, and my care was fabulous throughout my birth. Everything was amazing. And then I have a question for Dr. Berger. So you're mentioning vaccinations in terms of injectable vaccinations, but what about PO or by mouth vaccinations or anything like that being given in conjunction with injectable vaccinations?
Okay, so if you're referring to standard vaccines that are typically given and FDA approved, there are no oral vaccines beyond the rotavirus vaccine. If you're referring to more of like a no-so from a homeopathic perspective, I've looked and looked and looked, and I haven't been able to find any credible research that actually shows that it does provide a level of protection to somebody. Now, I do believe that homeopathic products, when they're made by respected companies, are very safe to do. And if somebody said to me, hey, I'm not comfortable giving my kid a traditional vaccine, but I'm comfortable giving my kid a homeopathic vaccine, I would say go for it. Because you're not going to make things worse that way. I certainly can't tell them that they're going to have the level of protection like I could by doing a blood test after a person gets a vaccine. So that's one of the things if people are doing limited vaccines, but they don't want a complete series, or they're ready for kindergarten and they're supposed to get boosters, is for almost all of these vaccines, we can do a blood test to see if the protection's there, and actually the school accepts the proof of immunity blood test instead of getting boosters. Oh, but those tests don't show positive via the homeopathic note.
And Sarah and Dr. Berger, I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but thank you so much, and we should have you back and do a longer program.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All fantastic. Right.
Okay, well, that's Dr. David Berger. Thanks, Doctor.
And absolutely.
Charlie Young, midwife, thank you very
thanks
much.
Thanks for having me.
And John and Tanya, thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you for having me again.
So we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Okay. Well, you're listening to 88.5 FM. This has been the Sustainable Living Program. Next week in this time slot, you'll hear Eve Prang Plews in the Health and Nutrition Program. This is WMNF 10.